Now, what is the advantage? Advantages are better utilization of resources. I've already mentioned this. Helps in achieving objectives. Economy in operation. Whatever I do in terms of time frame, in terms of resource allocation and utilization, in terms of manpower utility, everything becomes economical. Just what is required, not more, not less. That is the beauty about doing a planning, right? And then minimizes future uncertainties to a large extent, to an appreciable extent. Improves competitive strengths. Now, how does this happen? When I plan, I'm prepared. When I'm prepared, I'm able to be agile, responsive to changes. And when I'm responsive to changes, I tend to be one step ahead of my competitor who doesn't plan. Now, if all the competitors are planning equally well, then the best planning strategies made by any one of these companies will actually overrule the other. So today all of us will agree, be it service sector or manufacturing sector, planning forms the backbone to ensure that you stay competitive. Because when you plan, you have all the information on the table as much as possible. And then the people who plan and make the changes of the assumptions as and when the new information comes are the ones who are ahead of the competition. Number of examples you can take, and you can actually testify whatever I'm talking right now, right? And then taking it further, what are the methods of planning? There are three different planning methods which we talk about. It's a very common thing, some terminologies which we need to understand. One, we talk about objective plans. Second is standing plans. And the third one is what is called as master plans. Okay, objective plans, standing plans and master plans. Now, what is an objective plan? It's a basic plan. These are necessary for all types of planning operation. Whenever I am starting up anything new, I need to create what are called as basic plans, broad plans. I'll do this first, I'll do that second, broad, very broad. A timeline, broad timeline. I'm setting up a steel plant, let us say. So broad, a typical objective plan will be, I'll have to look for a land in a particular state which is friendly. And then I'll go along and, you know, make the place very clear. I'll chop the trees and, you know, pave all the mountains and all, you know, I'll take care of everything there. One broad plan, and then second, after that, I'll be going in for the civil works, etc., etc., etc. So this is becomes a basic objective plan. Plans to fulfill the objective. Next comes standing plans. These are policies and procedures, competitive, repetitive action, and are ready guidelines for recurring problems. After the work is starting or already started, it's on stream, then on a daily basis, on a routine basis, we need to have plans being done. Those fall into the category of standing plans. They're always standing there to take care of you. And those plans are something which you and I do every day. Right? Next, we come across master plans. These cover the complete course of action along with consultation of time and strategy. So the entire plan of the entire event of setting up a steel plant, the nitty-gritty of each and every set of activities is all given in a very detailed manner. That becomes a master plan. So from the master plan, I can derive the various activities which I can do. So these are the three broad categories which we talk about in this particular subject. Small plans are added together in an orderly way to speed up the course of action. That's how we arrive at master plan. And in terms of scope, plans may be either broad or detailed in character. These plans could be made function wise. Okay. Now, steps in planning. A very important crucial aspect of the learning this chapter is understanding the flow of what we need to do. A certain methodology is advocated. So there are steps in planning. How do we go about doing it very systematically? What are the various things we need to take into consideration? Right? So the first step is analysis of external environment. There are two types of analysis we need to do. A detailed study. Organization is here and the market is outside. So I need to analyze what's happening inside. It is called as analysis of internal environment. I need to analyze what's happening outside the organization, the marketplace, that is called as external analysis. Right? So what are we doing here? The term external environment includes, what does it include? The socio-economic conditions. Socio is to do with society, economic is to do with the generation of money and the generation of the wealth of the nation. So outside in the marketplace, where the people are living, where our customers are there, where our stakeholders are there, the transporters, the suppliers, etc., there, those conditions I need to understand. Socio-economic conditions. Any changes there is going to affect my plan. And then comes a political condition. The political condition of the land to which this particular company is belonging. If I'm setting up the plant in India, then the Indian political system I need to understand as to how it is going to affect my organization. How does it affect? Every political system has got its own manifesto. They have a type of a policy, a type of a credo which they'll follow. And every political system will say that we would be giving thrust to this type of industry. We would be giving these type of benefits to these type of industries. We would favor these industries because that is what our political manifesto believes. And so what they'll do is they would create an economic model which will say that the income of the land will be based on these activities. Depending upon where your organization is falling, you will get affected either positively or negatively by the economic policies of that political system. Hence, the political system of the land has a major impact on the organization which is doing business. All of us know about it, but this is something we need to make a connection and understand. If the political government changes, then we all know what happens. Certain organizations get benefited, certain organizations do not get benefited. Not because of the political affiliations, but because of the economic model which the political systems advocate. Right? Taking it further, step two. Step one is continuing. Socio-economic conditions refer to the classification of society on the basis of income, age, class, living conditions, aspirations, expectations, etc., which I've already explained. These factors are not controllable ones. They are out of my control because it's an ever-changing climate outside the organization, the socio-economic climate. However, every organization has to prepare the plan according to the changing trends in the external environment. No excuses. You're running an organization. So when you're running an organization, you cannot say that, oh, I never expected that people are going to be rejecting this product. You did not do your homework. At the end of the day, there are no excuses. So one has to really do a lot of rigor. One has to do a lot of work, hard work, to ensure that one gets a proper, ongoing, real-time information all the time. Ongoing, real-time information all the time. It's very important, right? Now, we also need to do what is called as a PESTL analysis. Earlier, it used to be called as PEST analysis, PEST. Okay, what does PESTL stand for? Let me explain. Political factor, economic factor, sociological factor or social factor. Then we talk about technological factor, legal, and environmental. In the past, before organizations were global, we used to talk only about PEST, PEST analysis, we used to say. Today, when companies have become global, we are in a global village, one single world of business, right? And then we talk about two more factors that have been added recently, which is called as LNE, legal and environmental. That's how the PESTL came into existence. Now, what are these? Let's understand. Political and legal factors center on the political stability of the country, its legal system, and its general attitude towards the business. I've already explained this, the importance of the political system and the economic impact. So every political system also fosters a type of a legal system. Legal system for the land, for the citizens, for the businesses, for society. So whatever legal systems is applicable, that will affect your business. A legal system in India will be different from a legal system in another country. So when an Indian company sets up a business in that country, one has to know what is the legal system out there. What is legal in India may not be legal there, and vice versa. So unless that is properly mapped by me, when I go there, my plans may go haywire. So this is a thing I need to take into account. The next one is economic factors. It relates to the country's inflation and deflation rates, interest rates, tariffs, balance of trade issues, growth, national economies, growth of national economies, exchange rates, unemployment rates, labor availability, etc. All the economic drivers, money, machine, materials, etc. Whatever changes are taking place, whatever is adding value in terms of tangible money, it could be balance of payments, you know, import versus export, whatever is a resultant of that. It could be the income due to foreign exchange earnings. So all those things coming together in the money form to the country will form the economy of the country, the health of the country, the economy of the country, which is again determined by GDP, national product, etc. Right? So that again affects your organization. How does it affect? When the country is doing well, the country shows a surplus in its product, national product as you call it. Surplus, that means the country is having money with it. When the country has money with it, what happens? Where does the money come from, by the way? It comes from tariffs, excise duties, sales tax, all the different types of taxation that is done on us, direct as well as indirect taxes. Those come to the coffers of the country, the exchequer as you call it. Now from that is deducted the costs, whatever they have incurred in terms of, you know, the wages of the government officials and various other things, and then we arrive at a net product. And that net product, if it is surplus, that means we have money in the country. When we have money in the country, what is the impact of it on your company? Will they impose more tax or less tax, assuming that the political system is a straightforward system? If the political party is straightforward, then they will not impose additional taxes because they already have money with them. So the quantum of taxation will be reduced. When the quantum of taxation is reduced in your company, in your industry, will your top line, bottom line be different? Yes. Top line is sales, bottom line is net profit. When the taxation is less, your net profit will increase. So the economic health of the nation does affect your business health, right? Next, socio-cultural factors, it relate to the country's dominant religions, the religions, the sect, the various types of community affiliations which people have, okay? The populace's general desire for leisure time, attitudes towards consumerism, all the consumer habits, the habits of the consumer, the way the whole transportation system operates in terms of getting goods to your factory, so many things outside, the changes that happen there, all that affects your organization's planning. If you take a typical consumer FMCG company, you're planning to launch a certain shampoo, and a lot of research has been done by you, extensive research, but out there in the open, if the population decides, the target audience whom you're targeting on, if they decide that we do not want the shampoo, a very good, well-researched product, when it launches in the market, it will flop. We have number of examples about this thing happening. Does it mean that the market research was wrong? May not be. Does it mean that the company did not plan well? May not be. The point is, the changes are happening so rapidly, we cannot catch the trend. Today we are in a what is called as a pop culture. And there the changes are happening so rapidly, it is almost impossible to catch it. In spite of that, organizations do a successful job. Many good companies are doing it because they need to have some sort of, you know, intelligence which is higher than the ordinary, some sort of a creative intelligence, something very different. And that's what is happening in many very good organizations, right? Next, we take you to the technological factors. Organizations keep developing with the pace of the technological development. Technology acts as a leverage, meaning when technology is used, organizations have got an advantage of leaping ahead in terms of their business. If technological changes are not encashed by the organization, if the technological changes are not being incorporated into their business processes, organizations have seen to be lagging behind. So any changes in the technology affects the organization. Take an example of the retail sector. The retail sector used to be a typical store down the lane, a cash and carry type of a store, wherein one goes, one makes a payment and takes the goods and goes back home. Today, sitting at home, technology has made e-retailing happen. We have Flipkart, we've got Myntra, number of, you know, e-retailing companies. And online you can buy your goods. Now if an organization has been doing extremely well, maybe 10 years back, doing only a cash and carry, brick and mortar stores, and if they say nothing doing, we are not going to be a part of the technological e-retailing, then you know what happens. They would be left behind, because the technological leverage which the e-retailing companies have, this person may not have. His reach will be limited unless he chooses a different type of a model. Okay, so technological changes impact the business, and they have to be incorporated when you're doing a planning. You envision what could be the technological advances 10 years from now, 5 years from now. For that, you need to have a very bright perspective towards what's going on. Very important. Okay, now we talk about environmental factors. Today, there's a lot of emphasis globally on environment. Gone are the days when a chemical plant used to be spewing a lot of toxic chemicals in the neighborhood, in a river or a pond or something, and getting away with it. Even now, unfortunately, in third world countries, it's still people go scot-free. But if you talk about advanced countries, you'll find that, you know, they're very, very exacting. Today, World Economic Forums, when they meet, they talk about this climate. It's very important that the environment has to be properly protected. So there's a global awareness. So whether it's a manufacturing business or it's any type of business, one is very particular about it. And there are environmental norms that every country rigidly follows. So certain countries are more rigid than others, more exacting than others. And so when you go along and set up a plant in that country, you better know your economic, you better know your environmental factors in that country. For example, if you compare India with, say, advanced countries in Europe, they are very, very demanding on environmental factors. In India, chemical plant may go scot-free. They may try to do something which is pretty acceptable. People may overlook it. But it doesn't happen out there. The social awareness is very high, and they actually pin you down if you do something nonsensical. So one has to be aware of these things. Managers can monitor the environment through boundary spanning. There's a term called boundary spanning. To understand what the environment is, I need to do, it's a process of gathering information about developments that could impact the future of the organization. All that I spoke about right now is nothing but information gathering, relevant information gathering. Somebody has to keep the ears and the eyes and everything open to what's going on outside. They must actually be in the marketplace and outside in the world to know what are the things going on. It's not only published information from secondary sources. It's one-to-one. People from the top management have to ensure that they're constantly traveling to determine what's going on. Business travel is separate, but you should also go and sense what's going on. That's why we have symposiums, you know, seminars, global shows. All these things happen because, you know, there we start getting sensing about latest of the latest happening. And then you take that information, superimpose it with your own company's policies, and then decide what sort of plans you need to execute, right? Managers can access information through variety of sources, customer and supplier feedback, professional, trade and governmental publications, industry associations and personal contacts, and many other sources, right? So now we discuss the step 2, analysis of internal environment. Now, internal environment is all about the company and within the company what is happening. So what are we doing? We have gone along and seen what's happening externally. Now we come to internal. In the internal, several key areas of the organization's operations should be examined in an internal analysis. So the key areas include what? The marketing department, finance department, research and development, production and general management capabilities. I need to understand what am I having within my company, what are my assets, what are my liabilities, what are my strengths and weaknesses, etc. I need to know that first. Okay? These areas are typically evaluated in terms of the extent to which they foster quality and support the competitive advantage sought by the organization. Are these departments equipped enough to face the competition? Ultimately, the sum total of each of the operations in the company, whether it's planning, whether it's marketing, HR, finance, all of them have to work efficiently, create linkages so that the company can be competitive. So everything starts from home, from within the organization. So I need to analyze, are there departments that need to be supported so that our competitive advantages increases? Are there departments that need to be taken as role models for other departments to follow? So I need to map my internal resources, my internal working, right? And so we resort to what is popularly known in the step three as SWOT analysis: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats. Now let me give you a view. When I talk about SWOT, strengths and weaknesses are internal to the organization. You can make a note. I map the strengths and weaknesses of my internal resources, my internal activities, my internal capabilities and competencies. Strengthen the strength and weaken the weakness, we say. So within the company, I need to know what are my strengths, what are the strong points, can I encash on it? Organizations have to work on the weaknesses, but many a time organizations spend a lot of time on working on the weaknesses and less time on the strengths. If you work on the weaknesses for too long, a lot of energy is drained and it may not be really worth it at the cost of encashing on the strength. So I would always advocate encash on the strength, keep on encashing. When you go stronger and stronger, parallelly also work on the weakness, but weakness cannot be taken as a primary thing to work on. This is my advice. So strength and weakness is internal to the organization. I need to work. For instance, the brand image of an organization could be its strength, while the inability to reach all the customers could be its weakness. So while the brand is strong, the channel is weak of reaching the customers. So one has to understand this channel needs to be strengthened. Now, if I strengthen the channel and the brand image is coming down, then it defeats the whole purpose. One has to keep this strong, encash on this, and then also work on the other one, right? Generally, people focus too much on the weaknesses. On the contrary, we must focus more on our strengths and improve on them. Then weaknesses could become lesser. An interesting phenomenon happens in group dynamics. When a group of people are made to work on their strengths more and more, after a period of time, guess what happens? When they are told about the weakness, they willingly work to make the weaknesses become minimum. This is the way human systems operate. Experienced people who are listening to me, I'm sure you must be knowing about this. When, you know, this we talk in terms of motivation, saying that motivate people for the good things they have, and naturally and gradually what will happen is they will also work on the things which are found wanting in them. There are two reinforcement theories in behavior that talk about it: positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement. In positive reinforcement, I am giving a lot of encouragement for behaviors that are repeatedly expected. So when I talk about his strengths all the time, come on, keep doing it, keep pushing, do it. What happens is I'm strengthening your strength. I'm not saying, oh, this is not there in you, come on, when will you become like this? I don't get critical about things you do not have, which is a weakness. Managers are guilty of focusing more on the weaknesses. It's more of a power game, let me tell you this, rather than encashing on the strengths, which is a proactive way of leading people. Okay. So, taking it further, once the common vision and the mission are statements for the organization are made, it is for the different departments to contextualize these statements into the working. Here we are taking the step four, determination of objectives. Like I told you in the earlier module, we have the vision, we have the mission statement, the strategy, the departmental objectives leading to the departmental goals. So, in this stage of planning, we determine the objectives. How do we do it? Once the common vision and the mission statements for the organizations are made, it is for the different departments, the different verticals to contextualize. So, put them in their context of their working. Finance will put the context in the finance context. Marketing will put it into the marketing context. So, they have to draw from the vision and the mission, the marketing context, the finance context, and then start working towards that. And every department should have well-defined objectives. They must create their own objectives. And this will be based on why the department exists and what are its broad expected outcomes. And how is it planning to realize the vision of the organization? The why and the how of the vision is the mission. That is translated through strategies into objectives. Objectives have got two purposes, two things. One is purpose and direction, right? Now, having done that, we go to the next step, determining planning premises and constraints. Now, very important aspect of planning is this. What does it comprise? It comprises planning premises constitute. The term planning premises means the set of assumptions that are made in the present for actions to be taken in the future. Sometime back I explained this. I'm standing here today and making some assumptions about tomorrow's weather. Now, when I make assumptions about tomorrow's weather, tomorrow is more or less under predictable control of my thinking. Because last few days, it's summer right now. Last few days it has been hot. Today it's also it's pretty hot. So tomorrow it'll be hot. So I am assuming that tomorrow it'll be hot because the time frame is very less between today and tomorrow. So I'm assuming this. Now these set of assumptions which I create today for predicting tomorrow is called as a planning premises. The premises on which I do the planning. When the time frame increases, the planning premises become more challenging. Right? Forecasting is fundamental to planning, and forecasts are statements about the future, specifying the volume of sales to be achieved and the equipment, materials and other inputs needed to realize the expected sales. A very common terminology we use in planning, forecasting. Forecasting is about looking into the future. Is it wishful thinking? Is it something that comes out of the so-called intuition? No. In a forecasting, I use a methodical way of arriving at the future. Forecasting does not always come true, but absence of forecasting will make you go into a very misty zone, a zone which is full of fog, where you cannot see anything. You will be getting into no man's land, and anything may be in store in front of you. When I focus, I know to an appreciable extent, if not total, that this could be the trend. So when I know that this could be the trend, is my preparedness a little better or not? Yes, it is. So forecasting is required for us to know that what could be the scenario day after tomorrow? What could be the scenario next month? Now, how do I do forecasting? I take information from the past, superimpose it with the information of the present. I use certain mathematical models and certain qualitative inputs, and then I project the future. Forecasting is nothing but it's a timeline of past, present and future. Quantitative as well as qualitative information from the past is taken, trends, and then I superimpose it with qualitative and quantitative information of today, present. Then I see the pattern. There's a pattern in every business that happens. So having seen the pattern, I use scientifically proven mathematical models, statistical models, regression analysis, histograms, pie charts. I use this and then I forecast the future. Market research organizations, they help you in doing this. Now somebody will come along and say with his own experience, forecasting doesn't work. We are not saying forecasting works. Forecasting might work, might not work. If your forecast has come true 3 or 4 years in a row, don't get carried away. Because forecasting, if it comes true, it doesn't mean that you have become a great forecaster. In fact, nobody can forecast anything. However, we can create forecasting processes in such a way that the degree to which we could be going wrong in getting into the future will be minimized. Forecasting reduces the tendency to go wrong in actions of a plan. It does not eliminate errors. No. Because anything can happen anytime that is beyond our control totally. Forecasting just tells you this is a trend. Now, in which direction the trend is going to flow? Let's see. There was a time when we did not have the smartphones. Some group of people forecasted the advent of the smartphones. then the 2G became 3G, and then now 3G is becoming 4G. Now forecasting of the future is based on certain happenings of the past and the present. Now those you have to be aware about, and then you can think about something of the future, which may or may not be always true. But let me add one more important thing. What we see around with people, experienced people, visionaries. When I do forecasting today, and I do tomorrow, and I am a person who keeps on doing forecasting by gathering information and collating it, putting them in a certain pattern and trying to predict the future. When I keep on doing it every day, periodically, time after time, what happens? I start developing certain type of skills. Some people call it business intuition. I start developing certain skills wherein I say predictably, yes, this is what is going to happen in this year. There are certain people in the world of finance, in the stock market, who are excellent in this. They are able to predict and forecast about future even when the future is going to be highly volatile. Presumably they have the business intelligence, maybe because they have been doing this for a very long time, and so they have the skill of forecasting. People look up to them. There are financial analysts in India as well as abroad who actually do it pretty well. Not all, only one or two of them you can say. Now the point that is being conveyed to all of you is forecasting is a very, very important skill. One cannot shy away from forecasting, looking at general behavior, saying that forecasting doesn't work. This forecasting is scientific, it's mathematical, it's got a lot of qualitative as well as quantitative inputs, and that's very essential to run your business and plan for the future, right? Next, we go to step number 5, determining planning premises. This is what we are continuing. Forecasting involves the assumption and anticipation of certain events. It implies the calculation of how certain factors would behave in the future. Planning should consider the likelihood of such behaviors of these factors. What's the probability that people are going to keep buying a certain type of a cell phone, a certain brand, in the following year, in the years after that? Will that behavior continue? That sort of a thing, it should give us some idea about it. Step number 6, examination of alternative courses of action. Like I mentioned earlier, planning is a flexible function. It's need to have alternate plans. An action may be performed in many ways, but a particular way is the most suitable for the organization in terms of available resources, in terms of its direction, in terms of its vision. Hence, the management should first find alternative ways and examine them in the light of the planning premises. Step number 7, I weigh the alternative courses of action and their selection. I've got to see which is the most favorable, wherein the input is as optimum as possible and I'm getting the maximum output. So I start grading them in terms of most preferred and the least preferred, right? Every alternate has its own strong and weak points. So there's a need for weighing all the alternatives to determine the best alternative. A course of action is selected according to the prevailing circumstances. Then we come to step number 8, in which we establish the sequence of activities. Having done all those analysis, I've got to put the flowchart now. Which comes first, which comes second, which comes third. I've mapped the resources, internal and external analysis I've done, and then I have to put them in a certain order of activities to be done. Activities are actions to be taken on a time frame, on a time bound basis. And the term action program includes fixing the time limit for the performance, allocation of work to individuals and the work schedule. These are necessary to achieve the objectives within the specified period. And then we come to step number 9, which is the formulation of action program. I need to put it in a certain format to be handed over for action, right? So creating and structuring the various tasks and activities to be done with their breakup of resources. Now we come to the nitty-gritty of converting all thinking into action through the use of resources and actual conversion of resources into finished goods or services. So we need to go into the nitty-gritty breakup of all the resources, the final things, the micro part of it. This step includes keeping in mind the likelihood of the unforeseen changes occurring in the future and the need for alternative courses of action. Step number 10, determining secondary action plans. Very important. Like I told you, action plans need to be modified as and when the situation demands, keeping the goal fixed. So there has to be certain type of a flexibility while going towards a goal. Once a basic plan of sales is decided, for example, a number of secondary plans need to be prepared. Secondary plans include production schedule, purchase of plant, machinery, purchase of raw materials, consumable selection, training and placement of personnel, etc. I have a certain endeavor to fulfill. I've got to sell so many thousand cars. What are the supporting things that come along with that? The supporting things are the people, the materials, the production facilities, etc. So those become the part of the secondary action plans. Step number 11, securing participation of employees. Very important. I must ensure that the employees are a part of my plan. They get motivated to come, accept the plan and then do it. So the management should involve employees in planning through communication, consultation and participation. Like I mentioned at the earliest part of the session, planning is not an individual activity, it's a group activity. There has to be a buy-in. The people who are affected by my planning have to know that they are a part of it. In many scenarios, it doesn't happen. I plan and I tell you to execute. And I draw a compartment saying that we are planning department, you are execution people. In many cases, many organizations, I find a lot of loggerheads type of things happening. People are fighting with each other because the left does not communicate to the right what it is done for the action. So when the operations people get plans which are not in line with their idea, they do not know that this is going to come to them. There's a major issue. The work will get done, but the buy-in will not take place. People will not feel emotionally engaged. There will always be a certain amount of animosity. It will become a divide between them and us, which is prevalent in many organizations. If planning says that we are the experts, we know planning, you are executors, you should only execute, we need not tell you about planning. If this is assumed and it is shown in action, then the executors will execute and they will also not be cooperating with these people. There's a term called cooperation that comes into picture when we talk about management. Anything that happens in a group effort does not happen if there is no cooperation. And cooperation is willing, not enforced. If I have to cooperate with you, there must be a buy-in between you and me on whatever we are working together. When I'm doing this video shoot, for example, there's a buy-in. And I know the purpose of what is being done. There's a lot of, you know, we work as a beautiful team out here. And these are all told to all the people who are there, everybody, myself, my colleague who's behind the camera. All of us are into a very coordinated engagement of each other. And when this is planned, the timing of the shoot, etc., etc., it becomes so easy for us to really involve ourselves and give out the best. Right? So that's very important. And then follow-up and evaluation is very important. Step number 12, there has to be a system of follow-up. The management needs to observe how the planning is being done. Post-planning, when the execution is happening, I have to ensure that I'm following up to know whether it's going as per plans or not. There's a process in principles of management which is called as controlling. Controlling ensures that everything is going as per the plans. So we need to have a controlling element introduced at this stage. A system by which we evaluate whether the plans are going as per what we had decided.